Good Tuesday afternoon. Welcome into Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan, and you have made it like we have to an NFL game week on G&D. Two more sleeps until National Football League action on Thursday night to kick off the season. The NFC East in the spotlight, Cowboys and the Eagles. Of course, the other two teams, the Commanders and the Giants, start on Sunday afternoon from Northwest Stadium. Danny, we have an amazing show lined up for people today, including Kevin Burkhardt, A-Team on Fox with Tom Brady. He's going to join us in 25 minutes just before 2:30. Charles Davis is on the program today at 3 o'clock, CBS Sports NFL Network, one of our favorite football guests. We'll go all around the league with him. At 4:40 today, Ross Tucker stops by. He's getting ready for week one of the NFL season as well. Got some headlines to hit with him. And then at 5 o'clock today, we'll talk all things new rules and officiating in football with our buddy Mike Pereira of Fox Sports. So that's Kevin Burkhardt, Charles Davis, Ross Tucker, Mike Pereira. It's going to be a who's who all week long on Grant and Danny because it's football season.
It's time.
It has arrived.
Let's hit some bolts. Let's take a 2-0 cookie about 4:10 to left center field all week long because we had one more day off to recuperate. We're fitting 4 days of football into some short shows and then a couple bits of weird schedule. Doesn't matter. It's time. It is here. Great weekend of college football. Couple unexpected results. Few good games. Few games that ended poorly. Whatever. We'll go through it all. But it's here, dude. Like all the stuff counts. All the offseason countdowns. All the lists. All the top 100 guys you'd like to start a franchise with. We'll start at number 2,000. All that crap done. Sorry, they count right now. All your fantasy drafts, all the betting, all of the things that come with the fall and the foosball, they are here this week, and we're lining them up.
6 o'clock, I should point out. We're here till 6:15 tonight. Nats pregame, Charlie and Dave at that time. But right at 6 in our final 15 minutes, we are going to make a couple of show announcements, including who our regular weekly guests will be on Grant and Danny this football season. And we'll also let you guys know what games we're traveling to this season, thanks to our buddies Kondori and Murad. And maybe, just maybe, you guys can make some plans to join us in those road cities so that we can kick it and enjoy ourselves and have some of the local drinks and foods on the road with you guys in our two road trips this year. So that's all coming up today on Grant and Danny, a little football extravaganza. But you just mentioned it. What an amazing weekend of college action. It started really on Thursday. And then it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. 5 straight days of college football. This is how you got to kick it off. It's layered. It's intense.
Yep.
Just when you think you're done, there's another one coming. And you get hit in the face by another college storyline or game that you care about. The NFL knows how to do this, too.
They're pretty good at it.
This week, they've got the Thursday and the Friday and the Sunday and the Monday slates covered for you. Used to be things got started Sunday at 1 o'clock. Then it was the big national Thursday night game. Smart. Now it's Thursday night and an international game on Friday night to make it all work out as far as the rules go.
Yeah.
Then we've got the whole day worth of Sunday action, and now we've got Monday night as well. So we'll have 4 out of 5 days. Can't do Saturdays because of college, or else they would. We'll have 4 out of 5 in the NFL. Let's go through some of the big storylines in college football from this weekend. First things first, I was giddy about Texas-Ohio State. It ended up being a really entertaining game, even though there was no offense or no scoring. Two great defenses. The number one Longhorns lose on the road in Columbus to Ohio State 14-7. Arch Manning scuffled. This was our first real look at Arch Manning in a start on the road. He finished 17 of 30, which doesn't tell the story. Threw for 170 yards, a touchdown, an interception. Danny, his off-target rate in this game of 37% was the worst in that stat by a Texas quarterback in over a decade, and he was 0 for 5 on passes 5 or more yards downfield over the final 3 quarters. So it could very well be that he ends up winning the Heisman and leading them to a national championship and going number 1 overall this year. All those things are still on the table, but the talk of him being generational, I didn't quite see it in his first game as the guy at Texas with Quinn Ewers in the pros.
Thought he was bad. I think you said it correctly. Now, that doesn't mean that he is bad. It doesn't mean that he'll always be that. I don't think he's going 17 for 30 or 170 yards and he's going to miss every throw that he makes in crunch time and not convert third downs and be terrible all year long. But he certainly was in that game. I mean, he looked overmatched. It looked like he was late, looked like some of the throws he needed to step in and zip, didn't have the zip. It looked like he wasn't on time with things, looked like it was too big for him. Now, I understand that. That's claimed a lot of people. 120,000 people, whatever it is, at the Horseshoe, screaming at you, bearing down on you, with a number one in the country type opponent that just reloaded as a Natty Championship contender in their opener where they're fired up. Ohio State pretty much beats everybody except for Michigan these days. So that's not an easy environment. So I'm not slamming the gavel. But everyone should pump the brakes a little bit on crowning and anointing and letting you know that you've seen the next gold jacket wearing a generational transcendent blah, blah, blah.
I think that goes both ways, though.
Yeah.
Because I think the discourse, social media is toxic. I try not to argue with Twitter when I do this radio show because it's not a real place. But you're sitting there watching a game and you're seeing everything online that's being said or whatever. And everyone's trying to get the snarkiest joke off and the best zing off on Arch Manning. As if one game to start your career in the toughest environment you can play in against probably the best team in America going into the playoffs this year, I would imagine. The defending national champions is like the beginning and end. Not there's no preseason, you haven't played any games, this is your first look on the road. And by the way, the whole team offensively struggled. They couldn't run the ball.
Yeah.
You were behind the sticks. It's a dependent position, all that stuff. I think two things are true. One is, to your point, he stunk in that game. His first pass attempt, rolling out to his right, got a guy wide open. You know, it was a tough-ish play across his body, but he skipped it in there like 8 yards away from the receiver, and I was like, ugh, that's a bad pass. You thought it's the first of 30, it'll be fine. And a lot of them look like that. Again, the on-target percentage was the lowest of a Texas starting quarterback in any game in over 10-plus years. So he did scuffle. Even with that, though, we just live in a world, and we saw it with the Griffin stuff and the Cousins stuff here. Every throw is a referendum. Every throw is an endorsement. See, he's the man. See, he should go first. See, he's terrible. And that's just how people operate, trying to confirm their priors. But this was Arch after the game. It was an ugly one. Texas 0-1 is the number one team in America.
I hold myself to a high standard. Recognize I got to play better. Got to lead more. Got to get our guys to play well around me. And ultimately wasn't good enough. So, yeah, I am hard on myself. I was surprised we weren't scoring. I mean, moving the ball, but ultimately, you got to adapt and adjust, and that's what good football teams make you work for it, and they definitely did that on Saturday. I think it was a long 24 hours, but I think I got it all out of the way, watched the tape with everyone this morning, and the good, the bad, the ugly, and then now we're full on to San Jose State after, I guess, this media, after you stopped talking to me.
Wasn't that much good, so that part of the film study probably went by quickly, but San Diego State, you level down a little bit. My guess is he plays a lot better.
Yeah.
He puts up some numbies. It's three touchdowns and 279 yards or something, and the pendulum swings back. But he got tested, and it was not a test that went well.
Yeah. Hey, Siri, what did Eli Manning sound like at 20 years old? I mean, that's all I could think about, hearing him talk postgame. I hadn't heard a ton of him commenting, and it literally sounds like he's doing an Eli impression.
Uncle Eli?
From that age. Yeah, it was wild, man, to throw it back.
Good news for Arch Manning. He hasn't had a lot of it the last few days, so I'll give him some good news. He didn't have the worst debut everybody tuned into this weekend.
Yeah, everyone was watching.
That belongs to Bill Belichick. 48-14 whooping for North Carolina last night at the hands of Texas Christian. Now, my takeaway from this was actually pretty simple. TCU's players are way, way better than North Carolina's. I didn't really think much more into it than that. You'll get your think pieces about how it was all Brady and Bill Belichick's a boob and, you know, Jordan, what's her name? Jordan Hudson or whoever that girlfriend
sure.
is that he has is ruining his life. Or, you know, there's going to be all kinds of stupid takes, I'm sure. But 48 points allowed, the most ever by North Carolina in an opener in team history. Bill Belichick's defense gives up 542 yards and 29 first downs as the Tar Heels got outgained 542-222, Michael Jordan, Lawrence Taylor, Roy Williams, you name a celebrity with ties to North Carolina, they were in Belichick's suite last night enjoying that one at club level. And boy, did they see a gross performance. First drive, they came out. They went right down the field.
Gangbusters.
I saw Skip Bayless and Colin Cowherd popping off about how they're about to win the national championship. They're doing shtick about him being the second best college coach ever to Saban. And it all came crashing down.
Nick Saban never lost by that much. I mean, dude.
Did he never lose a game by 34?
I don't think he.
His whole career?
I don't think he did. And I have to go back and check that. I saw someone tweet that, so I'd have to double check it.
In fairness, never coached at North Carolina.
Right. Yeah.
I don't understand what Belichick's doing, really. To me, there's nothing to be gained by this. Unless his goal is like, I don't care what anybody thinks as we get bludgeoned. I'm going to get to teach the fundamentals of football to a bunch of dudes and build this thing from the ground up. and that's what he gets off on? Okay. To me, this just seems like a really, really weird business decision.
Yeah, I don't think I don't know what's going on in his brain. I do know this. They don't have the horses, and I don't know if they're going to get them. I don't know if that's exciting for the 18-year-old who in his life probably doesn't even remember when the Patriots were awesome and Belichick had everybody's scheme was better. They just remember when he couldn't draft very well for 5, 6, 7 years and Brady leaving and winning a Super Bowl elsewhere. It doesn't look very good right there. So again, it's one game. Who knows where it goes if he's able to instill his culture and his way of doing things, but doesn't seem like everyone's having a whole lot of fun.
TCU was playing against air in the second half.
Felt like it.
Every play a first down, people running wide open. I mean, it looked like a preseason lineup for North Carolina. You know, the backups were in and the starters were in for TCU. Their running back, Kavorian Barnes, goes for over 110 yards on 11 carries. Their wide receiver, Jordan Dwyer, was uncoverable, 9 for 136. He scored a touchdown. Belichick's got to get back to the drawing board.
Well, I was doing a fantasy draft last night during that game, and I even tweeted this at Funny Danny, and every time it seemed like I was near on the clock, sort of, okay, I'm a few picks away, let me lock in, see who my choices might be, et cetera, I'd be looking at my computer and look up, and then UNC didn't have the ball anymore. Like, the way the timing kept working was I only saw them play defense for the entirety of that fantasy draft, it felt like. It just, you know, you've had that happen, whether it's basketball or some game where it just feels like you're always defending. Like, when the Nats can't score, it's like, we're back on defense again. We went 1-2-3 on 4 pitches, and like, let's get back out there. The pitcher's warming up. Feels like you never have a chance. You're just getting bludgeoned.
Before the game, Bill Belichick did this interview with Holly Rowe, which had me actually laughing out loud. He's just zero energy and has nothing to say. But she asked about 34 years ago to the day you made your NFL coaching debut, and he's like, I hope this one goes better. Cowboys whipped our butts. It didn't, by the way.
It did not.
Narrator voice, this one did not go better.
And the Horned Frogs took it to the woodshed.
And then she was asking him about, like, his hoodie, and he's like, it's kind of my thing. I mean, that was actually, like, I don't think he meant it to be funny, but
he's
it made
going straight
laugh.
Deadpan.
But this was Bill Belichick last night on an ugly evening to start his UNC career.
Well, it was a great, great atmosphere here for the game tonight. You know, fans were had a tremendous energy, a walk. And, you know, we played competitively, but then just couldn't sustain it, so. Obviously, we have a lot of work to do. You know, we need to do a better job all the way around, coaching, playing, all three phases of the game. Just wasn't up to what it needs to be, and I know we're a lot better than that. So,
this is seemingly a negative college football theme here, but these are the big stories of the weekend. How about Alabama being in some trouble? Kalen DeBoer can relate to Bill Belichick. He is the butt of jokes today in circles with that fan base in Tuscaloosa. So, freshman, second year, where do I want to go with this? Fresno State, his second year. Let's start there.
Okay.
They make a leap of 6 wins from year one to year two for him. Then he goes to Washington, and year one won 11 games. He goes to 14 year two, and they're a national championship caliber team. This is year two in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, they went 9-4, and the expectation is now, you had your season.
Here's the leap.
You took your training wheels off this offseason. Now it's time to go win a natty title. And they lose to Florida State, a team that won 2 games last year, and they got destroyed. Early on, first 3 drives, their defense, unprepared. Drives of 75, 65, 52 yards. They give up 72 points. Out of halftime, you think, okay, let's go make some adjustments. Let's coach. They give up a 68-yard touchdown drive. End of the game, they've got to get off the field to have a shot. They give up another 75-yard touchdown drive. It's hard to pull out the positives from the game. You go to the offensive side of the ball, they've got this uber-athletic quarterback who looks the part in Ty Simpson. He struggled big time, 4.9 yards per drop back. Same number of negative plays as 20-yard gains. Their wide receiver is one of the best in America, Ryan Williams.
And they can't get him the ball.
When they did, he dropped it.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was the thing that, I've always said this, when I watch a football game, the thing that boils my blood more than anything is drop passes. Like, there's almost nothing players can do, maybe fumbling, where I actually get mad at them. The drop pass thing. I'm watching Ryan Williams. I have no horse in the race. In fact, I'm probably rooting for chaos and a Florida State upset. But he dropped the ball so many times by the end of the game, I went, I'm over this guy. Please transfer. I don't care how good you are. He could not catch the ball. And I got people telling me he's as good as any other receiver in America.
I mean, last year he was special.
Cool.
Yeah.
5 catches, 11 targets, 3 drops middle of the field. He left with an injury at one point. He was horrendous.
He was bad.
In this game.
I mean, my son had a soccer tournament this weekend, so I was able to watch like early part of the game when Alabama just walked down the field. pushing Florida State around, and I'm going, this is because there was some chippiness. There was some chirping between these programs. Tommy Castellanos, who was at Boston College, had kind of made it his mission, letting everyone know.
BC last year.
Yeah.
He was just frisky, not a good team, but like he was always a pain in the ass. And now at Florida State with some actual coaching and some weapons,
thoroughbreds, yeah.
They might be okay.
They might have something. I mean, certainly there's some speed there, some good designs. But I'm going, okay, Alabama's gonna just be physically better. Like, they're going to push Florida State around. They might score a couple times, but this is what the game's going to be like. And I'm checking the score, you know, during slow moments of my son's game, and I'm stunned. I could not believe that not only could Alabama not muster anything after that as Florida State was responding, but they were now behind playing catch up as Florida State sort of pushed them around the rest of the way. It was incredible.
Yeah, I couldn't believe how different the Seminoles looked. And kudos to Mike Norvell, whose head's been on a platter. Everybody's mm-hmm. wanted him out, the 43-year-old head coach there, after what was a tumultuous season going 2-10. They were 13-10 Orange Bowl losers in 23 and then went 2-10 last year in a dozen games. But to get that win decisively over Alabama was a big, big deal. But, yeah, Crimson Tide, if you're Kalen DeBoer, it's getting late early.
Yep.
I think any conversation about him getting blown out because of the buyout being so huge is ridiculous. Like, I don't think he's getting fired anytime soon. But you can't lose five games this year without this feeling like it's over forever. Like, in terms of that program yeah. and what Nick Saban had built, this doesn't happen if Nick Saban was there.
Well, good thing the conference is soft and you'll have a bunch of cupcakes. Oh, wait. It's a buzzsaw.
That's well said. Locally, quick one here for two games. Virginia Tech, their defense looked really, really good against South Carolina and a Heisman-caliber quarterback in Lenora Sellers, but they could not move the ball or score on offense.
I think that's going to be the issue.
They were down 7-2 after one with a safety. They were down 10-8 at the half. Same score going into the fourth, down 2 points. They end up losing 24-11. Sellers in the game, 12 of 19 passing for a couple hundred yards. I'd have to tag in Hokie Altizer here, who was on the broadcast for this game. Is Kyron Jones, Drones just not good? I remember watching him in the past and thinking, that's a pretty good college quarterback. He was 15 of 35 with two picks, gave them no chance in this game.
Yeah, he was really good 2 years ago in the second half of the year when the Hokies kind of had that resurgence. They were able to win the bowl game against Tulane, and then going into last year, they had so many guys returning, and he was one of those guys that they had such high expectations for. He struggled last year, kind of felt like expectations were high, and maybe he wasn't able to handle that well. He also had some injuries, but I think you saw on Sunday, you saw a little bit more of what you saw last year versus that first second half of the year that you saw him in 23, where he was a lot better.
8 of 18 on third down. Drones 15 for 35 in the game with the two picks. And if you're Brent Pry now in year four, they went 3-8 in year one, 7-6 in year two, 6-7 last year, and he's 0-1. I saw odds released today by Bet Online of college coaches with most likely to lose their jobs. He was at the very top of the list. Like, they got to the Military Bowl and the Duke's Mayo Bowl the last 2 years. That's not good enough in Blacksburg. You're going to have to do better than that.
And frankly, not a particularly strong conference either in the ACC. I mean, yeah, Clemson's really good this year. They're a championship contender. Well, you know, even though they lost opening week, that's a good team. And Miami, I guess, is pretty good, but there's not much else in your way. Let's beat Georgia Tech and Wake and Boston College and Syracuse. You should sleepwalk to a pretty decent bowl, 7, 8, 9, 10 wins, and that hasn't happened.
Lastly, Terps fans will be upset if I don't mention they kicked FAU's butts. Slow start, a lot of penalties early for them. They got their act in gear and won 39-7. Malik Washington, their freshman quarterback, making his debut, goes for 250 and three scores in their win. They'll level up a little bit on Friday night with the game coming up at home, but no real test there for Maryland. So some of the storylines from what was just an amazing start to the college season. I know there was a week half and a week zero and a week 0.75, but for week one, about as good as it got, sitting on the couch watching all those games.
Yeah, Notre Dame-Miami was incredible. One of the best catches I've ever seen for a late touchdown in that one. That was a blast. Barely even got to mention it. LSU and Clemson, it was perfect,
I love that
man.
Game.
What a weekend.
Garrett Nussmeier, bald. All right, Kevin Burkhardt of Fox Sports going to join us next. We will go around the NFL with Tom Brady's broadcast partner and the A play-by-play gentleman in the National Football League for Fox right here on The Fan.
Second down, it blitz again. Daniels, though, has some time. Let's it rip, floating it deep down the field, going for Brown. He's got it! A perfect throw to Deami Brown!
That's our guy Kevin Burkhardt on the call for Fox of Commanders playoff football last year. You know, he saw a lot more of the Commanders in 2024 than he probably thought he was going to.
That's right, more than you bargained for.
And he might see a whole lot of them again this year. Welcome back to G&D on the Fan. Let's go to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV, and our guy, the outstanding Kevin Burkhardt, will be on the call with Tom Brady, Aaron Andrews, Tom Rinaldi on Fox of Commanders Giants in the 1 o'clock window this Sunday. Joins us now. KB, I'm old enough to remember when a week one A team being at Northwest Stadium would have been pretty shocking, but you guys might as well, get a locker or something, leave some things at the stadium. You might be there a little bit.
Hey, you know what? First of all, good to be back with you guys. Second of all, that highlight you played, those are the best throws I saw all year. That was like dropped from the heavens to Deami Brown's, you know, numbers. Second of all, you know, look, it's great. I mean, for me, you know, an old school NFC East matchup, I mean, that's what I grew up on in the Northeast. I love it so much. So to be back there and have Washington, you know, kind of back on top, back in the championship game, hopefully the Giants will be better. They've made a lot of good offseason moves. I just love the whole vibe of it.
What is, as you're prepping for this thing, I mean, you know, the Giants are, there's some desperation there, certainly maybe from the front office, to the coach, maybe, you know, fighting for his job, and a Russell Wilson and company with, you know, some pretty stout players on defense. And then look at Washington with all the expectations from last year. Just kind of give me your big picture thoughts on this one.
Well, I love what Washington did. I mean, obviously it's going to be a little different, right? I mean, they kind of surprised some people. I mean, they're, you know, what they did in the offseason when they overhauled, you know, the staff and obviously with the new ownership going a little bit further back than that, you know, to try to get back to respectability. And the respectability jumped 8 wins in a year. And I don't even know if they had that in mind in their wildest dreams. But it was, you know, they have so many great things in place. And then I love that Adam Peters went out and said, all right, well, we got the amazing stud star quarterback now. What's ahead? You know, and, you know, I think they're an older team, veteran team on purpose because they tried to change the culture and everything that had been going on there. And then they won. So the fact that they go out and add big pieces like Deebo Samuel and Laremy Tunsil, I mean, I love it. I mean, I think this is no shocking revelation, fellas, but I mean, Jaden Daniels is a star. He's got everything you want, everything imaginable that you want in terms of a quarterback with a head on his shoulders. He's smart. He's accurate. Obviously, he's athletic. And then they surrounded him with a bunch of really good pieces. The biggest thing, among other things, is how do they handle success, right? They kind of came at you as the big underdog last year, and then teams didn't even know what hit them. Well, now they've had an offseason to look at it. So how are they going to react to that? That's going to be one of the real fun questions the first month of the year.
The great Kevin Burkhardt of Fox with us on Grant and Danny. He'll be calling Commanders Giants at 1 o'clock this Sunday. An actual game week here on The Fan. We're fired up about it. I saw that Jackson Dart was named the QB2 for the Giants on their depth chart. So on your play-by-play board, he's going to be right behind Russell Wilson, which surprises me a little bit, although he had a great preseason. What's your take on the QB situation there with Russell Wilson coming over from Pittsburgh, and as well as Dart played in the preseason, you know, how close he might be to seeing playing time?
I think the Giants feel like they have their quarterback of the future. That being said, I think they're really happy with Russell Wilson right now. You know, I think they needed some stability there. You know, obviously they hadn't won in the last couple of years at all. And they've had, you know, the offense has been a mess. And trying to figure out the quarterback situation is a big reason why, right? But I think Russell Wilson gives them a real leader in the room, a professional, a guy who's going to get rid of the ball, you know, on time and make the offensive line look a little better. And, you know, I know for the coaching staff has really been impressed by his example. And look, Russell Wilson's on a 1-year deal. He wants to win. And I don't think it's the worst thing in the world for a quarterback to sit. Now, look, Jaden Daniels came in and did something that, you know, is not done all the time. In fact, he did most things that weren't done ever. And I know we're in the culture of rookie quarterbacks play basically because they have to and people's jobs are on the line. But I think the Giants really love Jackson Dart. That being said, I think in the same sentence, I think it's fine if he sits and not only learns and matures and things like that, but gives Russell Wilson a chance to see if they can be competitive and win some games and at least be in some games. So I think it's a good situation. I really do. I think you've got a veteran quarterback who's positive personality, great leader, and is a good player still, even though he's not the same guy he was 10 years ago. And then you've got the guy who you hope is the guy to lead your franchise, and you don't have to rush him in right now. Like, let him absorb a little bit, whether it's 2 months or for the full year, and get even better. That's the way I see it. There's positivity there. Now they got to go win games.
So for this Giants team, Kevin, this is one of my, you know, entering the season sort of sneaky theories, is they're not going to be that bad. I don't think they're ready to, you know, be a playoff team and win a bunch of games and, you know, go make some noise, but they lost a number of one score games last year in semi-fluky fashion. They were non-competitive than some others, but I think you look at that defense, you look at, you know, some stability at quarterback, you mentioned with Russell Wilson. I think they're going to be a pain in the butt for some people, and there are pain in the butt this week for Washington. Kind of give me your thoughts on the Giants season.
Yeah, Danny, I think for them, they won a wild card game in 2022, and Daniel Jones played the game of his life. And ironically, it might have been one of the toughest things to happen in the organization, because then they had to pay him coming off that performance, and they let Saquon go. And all, it triggered all these other things. And then Daniel Jones was hurt a bunch in the 2 years. And so it sent the franchise kind of backwards. So this is the reset, right? This is the reset where they feel better about where they are. And I think really – they have Washington to look up to, in the sense, like, that's the team to me that they're trying to emulate, because, I mean, the Commanders had 4 wins 2 years ago, right? Or whatever it was. And they jump up again to the NFC Championship game by drafting a star quarterback and bringing in really good veteran players who can lead. And I think the Giants tried to do that, even if Jackson Dart doesn't play right away. You know, with Russell, and on defense, they bring in Javon Holland from Miami and Paulson and Debo, like good players, good veteran players who have played a lot in this league and who are respected. I think their defensive line is fantastic. The problem is they're never ahead to rush the quarterback. So if they find a way to be in games in the fourth quarter, even have a lead, I think that's going to be a big problem for other teams. So I'm with you. I think you have the exact right read. I think, look, every team wants to win the Super Bowl. But I think for them, behind closed doors, they tell you, hey, if we make a big jump and at least position ourselves for next year to be a real threat, I think they would sign up for that all day.
Kevin Burkhart of Fox with us here on Grant and Danny. He will be on the broadcast of Washington and New York from Northwest Stadium this weekend. He is there, a play-by-play with Tom Brady. KB, how about the rest of the conference at the top, with Philly as still the shortest odds to win the conference? The Packers just added Micah Parsons. That was one of the quietest 11-win seasons ever last year. Do they have enough to overtake Detroit, who's become a perennial power? The Bucs are a favorite in the South again. How do you see the conference that kind of you guys will be covering in the playoffs that goes through the NFC on Fox here? How do you see it?
Yeah, Grant, I think the conference is really good, top to bottom. That's number one. I would say that the Eagles, until proven otherwise, are still the best team, but their schedule is very difficult. And I just think from a win regression standpoint, I think they and Washington could come back a win or two just because the schedule is so much harder. But I think from a, you know, a roster construction, from a Super Bowl defending champ, they're still the team to beat in my eyes. If you look at the rest of the conference, I think the Rams have an argument to be the best team in the NFC. I think they are absolutely loaded. They did it with a young defense last year, learning on the fly with the retirement of Aaron Donald, and they were great. They're only going to get better. The only big question is the health of Matthew Stafford. Can his back hold up for a year? If he does, I think the Rams are fantastic. The Niners, it's an interesting year for them because all this transition, all of these veterans, you know, one of them in Debo going to Washington, and they had to change it up, but they kept, for the most part, their stars intact, and they have a lot of young guys for the first time ever in Kyle Shanahan Senior. They have the easiest schedule in the NFL. I could see if they stay healthy, if Christian McCaffrey stays healthy, they still play Niners football. I could see them finding 10 wins just through their schedule and who they play. And then you've got the North, which is so loaded and so good. I think the Micah trade for Green Bay was obviously great. Their D was really good last year and got better as the year went on with Jeff Hafley. But I don't know that I'm ready to crown them as the champs of the NFC North just yet. I think if J.J. McCarthy is any good, and I mean any good, I think Minnesota's roster is stacked. And you know, and then we have Detroit, which I kind of feel like Detroit's the same boat as Philly and Washington were. I think they're still going to be excellent, but just because the conference is tougher – and they lost both coordinators. Would it shock me if Detroit comes back to, you know, a 10-11 win team instead of a 14-win team? No, it wouldn't. But I still think they're going to be really, really good. So I think the NFC North is congested. I think Philly's still the best with the Rams right there. And I could see Washington and San Francisco making some major noise. If that's a way to sum it up. I know it's a long answer, but there you go.
No, it was perfect. Succinct. We loved it. This will be year two with you and Tom Brady. You know, I just, you're next to this handsome gentleman and nobody pays attention to. I just, you know, I feel bad. It's like you got to sit next to Tom Brady. What did he ever do in the NFL? What'd you think? I mean, getting to work with him last year and just as he came on as the year went on and got better and better at it, how are you guys kind of coming into year two philosophically here?
Neil, I think we all feel great about it. You know, last year was really a lot of fun, and I was really proud of what we did. I mean, you know, it's hard to be an analyst in the NFL, and with all the, you know, all the attention and things that were going to be on our group and Tom, and, you know, people were going to take shots at him no matter what. Fair, unfair, whatever, you know, that's part of the deal. But I thought that he was outstanding, and I thought we got better and better and better as the year went on, and that's really what you're trying to do, right? He I'll say this, among other things, he's just an unbelievable teammate. No shock for a guy that won more than anybody else. But he's an amazing teammate, treats everyone like they're kings, and is just so great to be around. Such a good guy. And you know, I think one of the most fun things for me, besides just getting to know him and become friends with him, is he's just a football nerd. He loves the sport. You know, I mean, we're in the press box, and obviously it's a place he's never been before. And, you know, someone makes a big play, and he's like, you know, he's like punching me in the arm and like jumping up and down. He's so excited, like watching the game. He's like watching the game, you know, guys, like we would watch a game, you know? And I think to me, like to be the greatest player ever and to have that enthusiasm, and you probably heard it in some of the broadcasts. Like, I think that was just so damn cool, like, for him to be that way. So it was awesome, and we're really, really excited for year two.
Love having you, buddy. Really appreciate it. Enjoy this weekend. Have a great call. Mix in a few, like, Washington touchdown calls, if you don't mind. That'd be a lot of fun to beat the Giants in week one for us.
Yeah, we could get a few of those. I have a feeling we'll see a few. Always good to be back with you guys, man. Enjoyed it, as always.
It's football appreciate season. You, needed to talk to Kevin Burkhardt to get it started. There he is. KB will be on the call. Commanders-Giants this weekend for Fox. Charles Davis of CBS is going to be with us in 20 minutes. We'll preview the NFL season with him. Next, there is one potential significant news item coming out of Ashburn today. A wide receiver working out with the team who may well sign, and if he does, he could play early this year as a veteran who's put some good seasons together. We'll get to that next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Charles Davis is on the show coming up in 12 minutes at 3 o'clock. You'll also hear today from Ross Tucker, covers the NFL, and Mike Pereira, the former official who is Fox's rules expert. They're all on Grant and Danny, all today as we kick off our game week for the first time on The Fan.
A game week, a.k.a. games that matter. Not a preseason, not a practice, not an inner squad, not a joint practice. No, the games that count.
Thursday Night Football, Prime Video. Sunday afternoon, you got action all day, Fox and CBS. Sunday Night Football, NBC, and then Monday Night Football on ESPN. Friday night is going to be on the app, I think, right? That's a Peacock situation, some type of NBC affiliation. So you're going to need a bunch of different abilities. Oh, it's a YouTube game on Friday night? Cool. Who can keep it all together? You're going to need a bunch of different apps to watch the football season. I think we went over this a couple months ago, and it's something like $876 or something.
Yeah, like if you didn't already have it and you wanted to find it and you wanted to purchase it, this is what it would cost you.
For the year-round apps that you need for the entire football season, which is pretty insane. But this is where we are now. I mean, it's just part of it. I actually go a little bit crazier. I have Sunday Ticket because I want every game to be able to watch on a second screen if I want to see, first drive of Jackson Dart. Let me pull up the Giants game over here. So when you add that to the YouTube TV subscription, that's a big charge.
Yeah, that's a big nugget.
Do you have any idea what it costs? I'm actually going to go around the room here. I'm not going to say where, because I don't know if I'm allowed to say or what the deal is. But my buddy, who owns a sports bar, gets Sunday ticket at his sports bar to show all the games for people mm-hmm. over the course of the season. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea what it costs for the NFL season for him to do that? I will tell you that it costs me, I think, close to $400 out the door for Red Zone and Sunday ticket, personally. So for a sports bar, based on what he told me today, to air NFL Sunday ticket on all their screens all season long, what would you guess they have to pay?
$10,000.
It's a big number. $10,000. Toby, what do you think?
I was going to go around that $10,000 number, but I'm going to go slightly under Price is Right style. Give me $8,000.
$8,000. Toki Altizer is in. Clary, you're a corporate guy. You deal with numbers.
He knows how much stuff costs.
Budgets. What do you think?
I'm going to go $6,500. $6,500.
Okay, now it cost me about $400. What does it cost a sports bar to get Sunday ticket? And to benefit financially from that all season long mm-hmm. without the express written consent, all that stuff?
All that stuff, yeah.
Of the National Football League.
I'm going to go on the higher side, and let's go with $12,000.
$12,000.
Yes, $12,000.
The number that I was told was $16,000.
There you go. I knew it was a huge number.
For a football season.
Yep.
I couldn't believe that. I was floored by that number. 16 G's for a sports bar to have Sunday ticket. It's based on size, I guess. So if you've got a bigger place, it could be a lot more. If you have a tiny little dive bar, you might be doing okay.
Where they go, how many TVs? And you're like, 20. All right, $16,000.
This isn't a huge spot.
Right.
You know where I'm thinking. You know where I'm talking about.
I think I know. Yeah,
place I go to a bunch.
I think I know where you're talking about.
$16,000.
Uh-huh. I remember hearing a similar number somewhere else years ago. So it wasn't quite 16. It was closer to 10, what I said. So I couldn't remember exactly. But it was one of those. I had my shock then. Or wait. It cost one person. So couldn't like each individual person that works here just get it, quote unquote, and then like have it on one of the TVs and you could bill it that way and save $15,000 or something. But no, they know. They're too smart. You can't beat their system.
I guess I'm just too cheap, because that's where if I was running a place, I'd be like, well, today we've got this game on Fox, this game on CBS.
Yeah.
If you come tonight, you'll have the NBC game as well. But I'm sure they make their nut off football. And a lot of these bars, they're going to make their money back off of all of the games that they make available. So how many calls do you get during the week? For someone to, hey, are you going to have Broncos Chargers because they're in town or they're here for whatever reason? Or in the D.C. area. You got a bunch of people living here that are year-round, still fans of that team. I know whenever I'm traveling, normally in October for the Major League Baseball postseason stuff I do for SiriusXM, on Sundays I'm posting up at a bar, and I'm calling that bar. I don't care what it says online. I'm confirming before I go over there Sunday morning that they'll have the Commanders game on TV. And I can't imagine I'm the only one making that call. And as soon as they say no, I'm on to the next. So do they make more than $16,000 from the people that are in there over the course of the football season for those games? Sure. That's just a lot of money still.
It's a huge amount up front. And again, the NFL can afford to do it. They can afford to charge it. Because imagine going to that sports bar. Do you have this game? No.
Well, the NFL gets to make its own rules and do it at once. It's a drug that everybody needs, and either you provide it or they'll go elsewhere.
Well, that's why pay-per-views were also for different fights or different those kinds of events. So like a regular person, it's like $129.99 at home. And it's like, oh, you're a sports bar? That's like $5,000 or something stupid like that.
We've got no update yet on Kendrick Bourne's meeting with Washington. He worked out for them sometime this morning. This is a career, now 30-year-old, 292 catch, 3,700-yard receiver. He had an 800-yard season in New England. In 2021, he actually was in San Fran with Adam Peters as a 25-year-old, had a 700-yard year almost with the 49ers. If he were added, he would supplant Luke McCaffrey on the depth chart, and who knows, maybe early on, depending on role and what they're looking for. He and Jalen Lane do very, very different things. Lane more of a burner, Bourne more of an underneath physical guy who's 6'1", 210. But maybe he could be a guy that actually got dressed on game days as well if he was willing and capable of doing anything on teams. But the fact that he worked out for the Niners, met with them, a team that he used to play for, a bunch of people still in the building that he was with in the past, and then got on a plane and flew cross country.
I was really surprised by that, to be honest with you.
To work out here tells me that there's a better chance he ends up here, but we're still waiting word.
Yeah, I think you summarized it very well. What you think of so many times in years past, if multiple workouts are scheduled, the guy wouldn't get to the second stop. Like, hey, we're going to offer you right now. Don't leave. We want you. And with the relationships that are already there, he'd already played in San Francisco with their kind of injury situation at wideout. There was a pretty quick path to him being on the field probably at some point, right? Given how banged up everybody is. The fact that he left and came here made me think this may be where he wants to go.
Our first feel on Commanders Giants at 3:30 today. Next, Charles Davis, one of the top analysts at CBS covering the NFL. You know him from his draft work on NFL Network as well. He joins us live on Grant and Danny.